everybody, for another episode of Forever Bristol City podcast, being recorded the night after the Caribou Cup second round tie at Ashton Gate last night in front of just under 9,500 fans, where it finished City 0, Norwich City 1. Bit of a disappointment that, I hope, for progression through to the third round, but we are where we are. I'm pleased to say that joining me today is regular Ian and also relatively regular Dave Fevs. Morning, chaps. Are we feeling blue this morning, or yellow, or green, or what? How are we feeling? You first, Dave. What do you think?
I never feel blue. You know, it's the wrong. I was going to say wrong half, wrong quarter of the city, isn't it? So not blue, but I'm not exactly the, from a football point of view, feeling red either. So
yeah, not great. Ian, your thoughts? I mean, you're always, you're never backward in coming forward with what you think, but what are you thinking this morning?
It was mixed emotions, really. On the one side, I always want to see City win, never want to see us lose. On the other side, there's an element of relief because of two things. One, the size of our squad. Secondly, the number of injuries we've got long term. Although we heard last night that, or we heard once again, that Vyman isn't as bad as was first thought when he came off at Hull. But they still don't know an exact time for him to come back. So that's a little bit more hopeful. But we have heard that twice before, and we did hear it about Scott, and that turned out to be wrong. Yeah. So the way I feel is I don't think we've got the squad numbers to have a cup run. And particularly as we're not utilising the younger players. I would have liked to see... seen Yeboah and Arroyo start last night. I'm not talking about putting in half the under-21s. That'd be silly. But yeah. I'd like to see those two guys who've been, I'll call it regulars on the bench. I'd much prefer to see them play and start the game. And look, if they'd have done 45 minutes and it was going wrong for them, they can always be hooked. But at least we know where we are, rather than just throw them in when we've got even more injuries. So in myself, I'm 10 out of 10, always am. But in football terms, yeah, it's a combination of disappointment, relief, and concern as to what we're going to do with Nigel Pearson saying we're not going to do anything in terms of incomings after the game. Concern as to how we're going to cope, because we are, I think, two injuries away from a crisis.
Yeah, I'd agree. Dave, the lineup. Norwich made 9 changes. They still look pretty good. Pearson was bemoaning the fact that, I don't have as big a squad as they've got. They were in the Premier League relatively recently. They got a new manager in Wagner. But our lineup, it sort of picked itself in your views. What were your thoughts when you saw that lineup being... listed there?
I guess the big surprise for me in the lineup was that we didn't play Dickey and Viner together and play Naismith in midfield. I thought that was what he'd do. I'm not saying it's necessarily what I'd do. I probably would have as well, in fairness. But I was surprised to see a kind of different centre-back combination. And I guess, I probably thought Knight would play because he's a bit of a Duracell bunny and I thought he'd be okay. But, a bit like Ian's just said there, I never want us to go out in the cup. I always want us to progress. But if ever there was a season, and listening to Nigel Pearson's interview afterwards, where I think it'd be a blessing in disguise, it was last night. Because I think, in fairness, Nigel managed the 15 players that played last night pretty well. And without kind of going too far into the future, to use someone like Andy King for 90 minutes who ain't going to start on Saturday against Swansea was good. He's kept Pring back. He's kept Viner back. He's kept Matty James and Jason Knightbar half hour back as well. So I think he's actually used the limited squad pretty well. And obviously we've got Taylor Gardner-Hitman to come back in as well at the weekend. So that to me was the big positive last night, was that we managed the senior professionals well. I kind of a little bit, I just on you know, Yeboah looks exciting. I don't want to get too carried away on him just yet, but, you know, I think we'll see a lot of him this season if it's, you know, only from the bench. I think looking at people like Raf and Jamie Knight-Lebel who've been on the bench a bit, and I know it's under 21 football, but if we look at the results there and some of the goals they're conceding,
They've conceded eight in the last two, haven't they? Is that right?
It's something like that, but I'm not hearing, you know, obviously we don't see them on Robin's TV anymore, but from the people I know that go or got kids in academy, I'm not sure they're pulling up the trees that they perhaps ought to be in under 21 football to you know, to sit on the bench. And I guess the other thing on that is if you put them on the bench and they're missing their under 21 football, and if they're not going to get on because they're not quite there and Nige don't want to expose them, it's almost kind of no point putting them on the bench. I said, Dave, we were talking very, very briefly yesterday that the movement to nine subs kind of just exaggerates the situation. If we had seven subs and they were the seven we had last night, we'd probably sit there and think, oh, it's not too bad. But nine subs, it becomes a bit of a overindulgence to some extent. And,
you talk there about two youngsters, Knight-Lebel and Royer, but again, I'll bring the name up into the equation. You know, I'm surprised he's still hanging around the place, but where's Duncan Idahun fit in all this? Because he's sort of, you know, is he persona non grata, or, you know, because you could have stuck one of them on the bench, couldn't you?
Yeah, he's been playing in the under 21s this season. I would imagine these playing in the under 21s to hopefully put him in the shop window to try and move him on, I guess, but because he's certainly nowhere near the first team, is he?
Right. Okay. No, I go with that.
That's only my thoughts anyway.
Yeah. And I'll stick with you, Dave, on this. I thought Sykes last night seemed to be in a more central role early on. I thought he showed some nice touches in there.
Yeah, I think he did all right. I think, you know, if you go back to his Oxford days, the seasons before he played kind of wide right for Oxford, that was his position, playing as a kind of number eight or a more central attacking midfielder. So, yeah, I was interested to see whether he was going to line up as a 10 behind Williams and King, but actually Williams played predominantly left of King and Sykes played right of King as the 2-8s. And I thought he had a reasonable game last night. Yeah.
Yeah, not too bad. All right, let's get into the action. And Norwich knocked the ball around well. You know, they seemed at ease on the ball. It wasn't a hot potato. First bit of action in, you saw this good cross from Plaqueta, and then there was a save that Max did. I mean, he's capable of doing those sort of saves, isn't he? But he does let it down with his distribution. I mean, what's your view on Max, Ian? You know, are those saves enough to sort of justify keeping him there as number one with the sort of number two that we've got at the moment in Harvey Wiles-Richards?
Well, and Harvey Wiles-Richards, I believe, played for the under-21s, and we had Stephen Bagic on the bench. Well, on what I've seen, it's a limited amount of Wiles, Richards and Bagic. And I had something interesting. I had a look at the emergency loan rules last night, Rule 57. And what it states is that you can bring in an emergency loan only if you haven't got any professional goalkeepers. Now, we've got two professional goalkeepers behind Max O'Leary. So with people saying, unless they're on some form of lesser contract, we won't be allowed to bring in an emergency loan if Max gets injured. So
is that right, Dave? You put your finger up there.
The rules are professional goalkeeper is someone who's played five or more games at the given level. So Harvey Wiles-Richards doesn't class as a professional goalkeeper,
but Bagic
does, because if you read a little bit further down 57, it also says, or comparable league if they've played elsewhere in another country. And Bagic has played for San Etienne and Paul. So he won't qualify. So if Max did get injured, we wouldn't be able to bring in an emergency goalkeeper. We'd have to play Bagic or we could play Harvey Wiles-Richards. But yeah, if this is why I thought we might have loaned out Bagic again this season to give us the option of bringing in an emergency goalkeeper if anything happened to Max. But that doesn't appear to be on the cards as it stands.
Okay. Mm. Fair enough. I mean, first half chances for us, Dave, few and far between. One shot on target all night. That came just before the interval. And it was one of the only, probably the only decent ball that Tanner did. But Naki could consider himself unlucky with that shot because he struck it well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Certainly hit with some power and it took a good save from Long. We had a chance early on as well when Mometi hit a shot that was kind of headed clear, which was looked like it was heading for the far corner as well. But yeah, it was a game of two sides playing a lot of football kind of around their own middle third, really. I think if anything, Norwich probably hit us a little bit more on the counter than through playing, you know, well orchestrated moves. And I think, you know, went in at half time and thought 0-0. Yeah, probably we could do it doing a bit better. But I thought we were in the game and not comfortable, but it was a fairly evenish first half.
It had the atmosphere. I took a couple of people along last night. One said it almost had the atmosphere of a pre-season friendly at times. You know, just the general atmosphere in the ground. It was hardly a febrile cup tie environment.
Yeah, I think Norwich's style of play in terms of playing out from the back and keeping the ball was, you know, probably doesn't help her. You know, it wasn't end to end as such, was it, to get the crowd going? I thought the crowd were actually quite good last night. I think sometimes night games you tend to get a more, I'll call it a football crowd rather than the people on Saturdays who could just go along because it's the kind of part-time fans. I was going to say it's probably a bit derogatory.
In fairness, I think you know what I mean. Section 82 did try and get a bit of singing going particularly in the second half. Ian, you know, that Wells with that shot there. I know he scored at the weekend his first goal in open play in 20 games, but I think Tomo pointed this out to me in a text overnight. You know, we say, oh my God, Naki Wells, if he goes, 30 goals in 144 games for us. That's sort of like almost one in five. Well, it is one in five, isn't it? I mean, you know, should we be expecting more from him, or is it about the service, lack of, particularly?
Well, it's about the service, lack of, the way the team's set up. When you look at our squad, if you looked at a potential starting 11 and you looked at which players would you bet on to possibly score a goal, you'd pick on Naki Wells, Tommy Conway and Andy Vineman, probably. Yeah. And if I said, which player would you think would be capable of scoring 10 or more goals in a season, you'd probably pick the same three.
Yeah.
Now, Tommy's out. And the last time he was out, he missed 15 games. Andy's out. We don't know exactly when he'll be back. He could be back Saturday. He could be back after the international break. We don't know. So he is our best hope. And as you've just said, I think it was one goal in 23 games from open play. So that doesn't scream at you. We don't need a bit of help up front. But I maintain that you could have the best number nine. You could have Harry Kane up there. But without the service, having said that, I mean, Naki did miss a sitter against Birmingham, but he doesn't often do that. Without the service and without a tweak in shape to enable us to play two strikers, I honestly don't think we're going to see us score many goals. I mean, it was all over the stats type forums. XG against Hull was just under four. We scored one. And that's because Joe Williams couldn't hit a cow's backside with a banjo as far as scoring goals is concerned. And other players, you'd think, well, if I said how many goals do you think Mark Seitz can pick up, you'd probably say, well, maximum six in a season. Yeah. Jason Knight, we don't really know yet, but I'd fancy him to be around about the same number. So there aren't many goals coming from all over the team. Sam Bell, once again, is probably another that you class in that bracket.
Well, I have to say, Ian, with Sam, he does look like most of the time he's played this season, he looks like little boy lost. Let's get into the second half action. Am I right in saying, Dave, just before they scored what proved to be the winning goal, did they hit the bar as well with some long-range effort? I think they did.
Yeah.
They
no, it was quite close. It was about 12 yards out. The kind of ball banked favourably for them kind of in our inside left channel, and they broke on us from about 40 yards out, played a ball into the box. Guy did a little back heel into the path of...
That's it.
I think it might have been Gibbs, not sure.
It was a hit the bar.
And he curled one from about 12, 14 yards onto the underside of the bar, and it bounced out, and you kind of think, phew. And then 2 minutes later, we give them the goal, which...
Yeah, well, take us through the goal, Dave, as you saw it, because I thought it was sloppy.
Well, commentators curse from me with Joe last night watching as the ball got played over the top of Tanner. I'm going, you'd do well to keep that in. And on the stretch, McCallum did keep it in, got the ball to Plachetta, and you know, he rolled Dickey too easily, unfortunately. I guess, you know, if you want to just, you know, not be overcritical of Dickey, you'll say Placetta is massively left-footed, and he spun him back onto his right foot and finished into the far corner. It was a pretty neat turn and finish, but disappointing if you're a defender, because you probably, even though he is left-footed, you probably show him onto his left foot onto a much narrower angle. And yeah, a bit of a soft goal.
And Dickey was playing on his preferred side there. I know you said it, and we've had discussions offline, doesn't make much difference which side Dickey plays, but no, that is his preferred side. And I thought he went on some decent foraging runs, but he didn't really have people to pass to. They weren't finding the spaces, were they?
No, that's right. So it's a bit disappointing goal overall to give away. And then, of course, you're on the back foot then against a side that, you know, make it difficult to get the ball back off of. And we did quite well against them, in fairness, in terms of winning the ball, but you know, not, they suck a load of time out of the game, and at 1-0 up, that's, you know, timing on your side, is it?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I'm talking about time. I mean, there was 2 minutes in the first half and only 5 in the second with all those substitutions. I still haven't worked out, you know, referees seem to be applying their own rules to time added on, don't they? Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're just making it up.
you've seen the goal on the highlights, Ian. How did you see it? I've seen a battleship turn quicker than Rob Dickey did for the goal. But for me, it showed the commitment of the Norwich player chasing what looked a lost cause. And Tanner was nowhere near the bloke, was he?
No, and this is one reason. There's a complaint that a lot of people levy against our fullbacks is they don't get up the pitch enough. And I think that might demonstrate why they don't. We've Camprings come under criticism for not getting up the field enough. George Tanner every week, our fullbacks didn't get up the field far enough. I've heard the manager say it, but they can't, because even when we, if you will, we have the lion's share of possession, there's always a threat in behind, because we haven't got anybody who can really give them the ball in a key area. And that lack of creativity is one of the reasons for scoring more goals.
Yeah.
If you look at clear goal scoring opportunities, apart from Hull, when we did have some because the ball was going in the box with better quality. And that's one of the, if I'm George Tanner or Cameron Pring, I think, hang on, if I'm going on a lung buster up the outside, am I going to get the ball? And how many times out of 10 am I going to get the ball? And at the moment, I reckon you'd be struggling to say any more than 3. And because of that lack of seeing a pass, creative, a pinger in midfield, then it's difficult for them to get forward. But, I mean, Ross McCrory, Pearson almost admitted, when they asked him what was McCrory's best position, he said, well, right back. He was brought in to replace George Tanner. And then we signed another guy who can play right back. So I think, I'm not saying George's days are numbered, but I'm saying there's going to be an awful lot of competition at right back. So depending on what injuries we get, we'll have to be moving players around the squad to fill holes here, there, and in everywhere.
Well, they're utility players, something that when Gary comes on the podcast, he says we want specialists in their positions and not these.
Yeah, I like flexibility. And I think it's handy that you've got players like Cal Naismith that can play midfield and can play that left centre-back role. But it's a question of where are they best. And yeah, my humble opinion is that I don't think George Tanner's a bad right-back defensively. And he's come up against some very good players. And for me, he's done pretty well. But there's no doubt he's not... I think he can get forward, and I've seen him play some good crosses and hit some good shots. But he's creating those opportunities in open play for him to be able to do that.
Yeah,
yeah. I think as well, you know, you talk about utility. I think most people, when they start using that terminology, are using it in the slightly negative context of jack of all trades, master of none. But I think, you know, Ian's just mentioned Cal Naismith. Cal Naismith's not a jack of all trades, master and none.
No.
He's, you know, and you know, we look at someone like Taylor Gardner Hickman, who can play right back, can play centre midfield. You only got to look back at Alex Scott, haven't we? You know, he can play multiple roles.
Well, he did a good job. He played virtually that season in that right back, and I think he looked pretty decent in that role. I mean, for me, right back last night, you could have given, because Tanner was poor. You know, and going forward, definitely poor. I've liked it when Sykes has played right back a few times in there because, you know, at least he's going forward and he likes a tackle, he can put a foot in. Dave, what did you think of Roberts last night? I thought he looked effective pre-season, but when he's come on, he seems a bit, you know, on that form to me, he's not challenging Pring, which at one stage we thought he might.
I think he just, you know, circumstantial last night, that the ability for him to get forward and show what he can do on the ball was, you know, came up against what I think, even with several changes, was a pretty good, decent Norwich side. And I think second half we start to see him drift in field a little bit, and that create a little bit more room, but first half I don't think the opportunities were there for him. I thought he had a steady game. I think defensively he did his job. We just didn't, you know, get the most out of him. And I think that if you watch that game back, I reckon you'd probably say most players had a close to a 6 out of 10, but there weren't enough players. You know, we didn't have three.
There's
or four.
No seven there, was it?
No, yeah. there weren't enough. You know, I think people like Joe Williams, I think, had a probably was our best player last night. Gets a load of unnecessary stick, I think, because of his injury form, rather than people actually watching how he performed. Number of times he nicked balls last night and got Sykes going forward, or got the ball out to Cornick or whatever. I think he was decent, but even then I wouldn't say he got a 7. He was probably a 6.5.
I was calling, like you were at the start of the recording today, I thought late on in the game when we're, you know, I know both of you have said don't really want a cup run this year, but, you know, we're 1-0 down chasing the game. Could have tried the Viner and Dickey combination in readiness maybe for Saturday and push Cal Naismith into midfield. But Ian, you know, two players that were, so say, going to be signed in the summer, but we got them in January. Goodness me, Cornick and Mometi. I tweeted earlier this morning, have they, we, coached the joy out of Mometi? But, I mean, the pair of them, take Cornick's long throws away, and okay, he did reasonably well at Hull Friday night. Saw the whole game, but I put on Twitter they're not really any better than what we've got. You know, because you say Cornick and Mometi, Sykes and Bell, that's the alternatives. But Mometi's having a bit of a torrid time, Ian, isn't he? In particular,
well, I think that the phrase you used was coach the joy out of him, and he doesn't look the player currently that he was when he first came in, because when he first came in, he was putting in some effective crosses. I remember one particular one, I think it was against Wigan in a night game that Rob Atkinson headed in. Excellent cross. The issue, you mentioned Roberts, and I think the issue is Roberts was looking good against lesser teams. He's now up against Championship defenders, and it's a world of difference, because you're not playing against, with great respect to League One players, you're not playing against big lumps or blokes are possibly on the way up. You're playing against honed in some guys, some of whom have played in the Premier League. And they, as well as being big, strong, athletic defenders, that they can play football. And that's the difference. It's that quality of player. Just for a laugh, before the game started last night, I wrote down the subs that I thought Nigel Pearson would make. And I got 3 out of 4 right. And that makes, I think we're a bit predictable. In fact, I think we're very predictable in how we play, and we're easy to play against, particularly when we're at home.
Yeah.
Which is why I'd like to see it. I'd like to see it tweaked.
I heard you say that on Radio Bristol last night.
Not rip it up and start again.
No.
But tweak it in order that to make us more threatening at home. And it, you know, all I was suggesting was play an extra striker and leave out a holding midfield player. Although, in fairness, Dave hit on this. We're not really playing with a double pivot. We're playing with a single pivot, and Joe Williams pushed further on, trying to break up play in the final third, possibly. But in that position, Joe's going to get opportunities that he's unlikely to take.
Because his lack of finishing capability.
Well, no, that isn't his strength. You wouldn't sign Joe Williams as a player and say, right, this is a bloke who's going to get us 10 goals a season from midfield. You just wouldn't, because that isn't the player he is.
No.
So if you're going to play with, if you at least play, you know, more like an 8 than a 6, you know, one alternative, you could play with 2 8s, and you could use TGH and Knight as your 8s and play Matty James as the pivot. I thought we were more of a 4-1-2-3 rather than a 4-3.
I mean, look. Pearson said after Hull, if we play like that every week, we'll win a lot of games. Yeah, and I sort of inclined to agree with him, having watched a full 90 minutes. Dave, do you think we're predictable at home?
I think what we're struggling with at home is the ability to play through the middle of the pitch. So everything, you know, some people might have read, I wrote an article pre-season, and there was a little bit in there about last season, in the second half of the season, when we switched from the back four, you know, and the kind of formation we're seeing now. I call it kind of, you know, three Buffalo girls go around the outside, because the only way we could create was going around the outside. And pre-season, you know, take on board is against lesser opposition. But there was that, those balls into Scott and Knight and Vyman, where they could take the ball on a half turn in the centre from a good ball from someone like Dickie or Viner, and then they'd be at their defence. And we've not been able to do that very well in the home games. And I think if we look at how we did that the other night against Hull, we opened them up in the middle of the pitch. But I think you have to give a lot of credit to oppositions as well. And I think we've played actually 4 top half teams so far, and we've, you know, results wise, we haven't done too bad. Are they going to be top half teams at the end of the season? Not, you know,
well, maybe, say,
but they might not be, you know, the best side. But Preston, Birmingham, Millwall, they're all disruptors. They're all teams that base their game on stopping you playing. And therefore, I think until we've seen a bit more alternative opposition, I don't think we'll know whether it's a home hoodoo or you know, or what. I think, you know, we've showed that we can attack, because against Hull, and I think we controlled the game against Millwall and ground them down and started creating chances because of the, you know, the types of sides they are. So I think we'll get a better indication as well on Sunday against Swansea.
Saturday, London Saturday, sorry, Swansea. It's been moved. Swansea team, certainly under Russell Martin, they like to play football. They've lost a lot of players, I think, in the window, haven't they? But they've
well, he's at Southampton now, Dave.
Yeah, so they got.
That's what I mean. No, he's like they used to play under Russell Martin.
They're under change, aren't they now? So they lost last night to Bournemouth, I think. I think this is a good time to play them, and we'll get another sense of how do we play against certain sides. And I think, you know, I think once we get to the next window, we'll have a not window, sorry, the next international break, when we'll have probably played 10 or 11 games.
We'll have played 11, Dave, by the next
we'll have a better idea of what type of side we are. I think we are a little bit into looking at, probably overthinking it, but without thinking about who we've actually played against. And I think those sides, you know, Preston always give us a tough game. We have a slightly better record against them, but they, you know, they stick players in places and they push up and they go 3v3 at the back and they condense the midfield. So it's not surprising there was no room in that game against them to play. And similarly, Birmingham, I thought we were masters of our own downfall, really, and giving the ball away cheaply and making them look a better side than they actually were. Yeah. So, you know, we'll see. I'm not going to get too down on it at the moment.
Okay. Well, I put we need to get a point. We need to get at least a point at Swansea. I tweeted this last night. We need to get a point, because if we get a point, then from the opening five games, it goes, what is it? 1-3-1, I think it would be then, wouldn't it? Yes, is that right? Yeah. And that's not great. And I called that a C-plus season. Ian, Ephraim Yeboah, you know, another youngster, Steve Lansdowne, said, oh, we'll produce a £25 million player every season and build up the nest egg. Yeah, notwithstanding Tommy Conway looking to be the most player likely to maybe live up to that billing. But as part of maybe changing things a little, would you start Yeboah on Saturday, or do you think he's just as a 17-year-old good to bring him on? But if you're chasing the game, you know, has he got that composure that you might need? I'd run him from the start. What do you think?
Personally, I'd start him either in that game or in the next home game against West Brom. Basically, because we're not scoring goals, particularly at home. And, you know, what's the worst that could happen? He goes in, he doesn't do very well. You hook him, you know what you've got on the bench. You know, you've got the likes of, it'd probably be Cornick that would be left out, but you know you've got him to bring on. So if it doesn't go well, and we've seen Nigel Pearson hook Alex Scott after 21 minutes. Yeah. So we know he can do it. So I would say in the absence of nothing else, look, if we go out and bring in a powerful striker who can hold the ball up on loan, yeah, give him a start. But on the basis we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
I'd give him a go.
Yeah.
Could possibly be, I mean, and I say a slight tweak to the formation, a 4-1-3-2. And I think all of our strikers, it is my opinion, all of our strikers are better and have shown better form in a 2 than a 1. And that, let's see if that helps. All right, the wheels could come off. We could lose a game. It could be a terrible idea. And I could be completely wrong. And if that's the case, I'd put my hands up.
Yeah.
But it's not, I mean, we're not going to score less goals than we're scoring, are we?
No, that's very true. Dave, would you be bold and give Yeboah a start? What qualities have you seen him in the cameos that we've had him appearing on the pitch so far?
I think it's pace and rawness and, you know, and desire, you know, all those kind of things that are, you know, good attributes to have in a young player. But no, I wouldn't start him on Saturday.
He wouldn't. He's got a touch of the Semenyos about him, because he seems to have good upper body strength. And talking about Semenyo, he scored that goal against Liverpool, and I watched a chunk of that Bournemouth who they were playing at the weekend, Tottenham weekend. He featured well there. But would you agree with me that Yeboah's got that sort of, you know, he's brought strong shoulders. He's not massive, but would you agree with that?
No, I think, yeah, he's got those physical attributes, so hopefully he'll continue to develop. And just see that Zane on the YouTube feed said Yeboah is class, needs to start against Swansea. But I think, you know, in fairness to the lad, he's come on and he's had a couple of cameos. But Saturday, if we're sat here today thinking about who's going to play, I think he's going to play Gardner Hickman at right back, and I think he's going to play Mark Sykes on the right side of the three up front.
Do you think he'll do Viner and Dickey and push Cal into midfield?
Possibly. Yeah, I don't know. That's the kind of bit of an unknown. I think he might play Viner and Naismith. You know, Dickey's he wasn't overly complimentary about Dickie last night, was he? So, and having got sent off, that, you know, he still, I guess, blotted his copybook to some extent. But, and I think, you know, it'd be Wells. And I guess the question is who plays left side of the forward line. But, you know, we've actually got some options in midfield. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's James, Naismith and Knight. I think I'd be a bit unfair on Joe Williams, who I think is probably...
But you always say, Dave, it's not about formations and 11s. It's a 19-man, a 20-game matchday squad, even though we can't fill the bench at the moment. All right, I think that's the game done to death. Transfer window's approaching. We all heard Nigel's interview last night. Ian, Nigel, do you think the goalposts have been altered the last 2 weeks compared to what we were being led to believe 2 months ago? Is that your view, Ian?
Yes, I think my view, and it seems to be the view of an awful lot of City fans, and I can only go by people I talk to in social media, but that's an awful lot of people across a variety of age groups. Everybody was pretty happy with the transfer window up until the sale of Alex Scott. And most people accepted that we would sell Scott if the right offer came in, and it appears the right offer came in. Now, whether that was 20 plus 5, whether it was 25, I don't know, in all honesty. But it would appear to me that it was more likely to be 20 plus 5 in add-ons, but... we sold him, and obviously he hadn't kicked a ball yet because he had quite a bad knee injury, which Bournemouth knew about and City made them aware of when they bought him. So there's no con job there. And I think most City fans, certainly the really sensible ones, thought, well, we won't spend all of it, but we'll probably spend something approaching 4 to 5 million and bring in the reinforcements that we need, given the long-term injuries that we've got. And that seemed, the injury situation seems to be ongoing. And when we get one player back, another one to go out, and that seems to be the way of the world. So, and what we've done is we brought in Taylor, looks at a decent signing. West Brom fans didn't really want him to go. That's always a good sign. And that's on an option of a purchase for 1.3 million next summer. Now, that's an option. So that money's committed, if you will. But if we get to the end of the season and he's really not all that, we can send him back.
Well, he just goes. It doesn't happen. I mean, so you're saying it was good up to the Scott.
So at that point, I think fans are expecting, well, OK, who else are we going to bring in? Because I think we need a centre forward, a centre back. We could do with an experienced backup for Max, or actually what I prefer to is competition for Max. Because if you're talking about competition in every position, we haven't really got it for the goalkeeper. And another player I'd like to see us sign is a creative central midfield player. Now, I don't care if it's a loan. I don't care if it's perm, but I think we needed those reinforcements in our squad.
Can I just say in there, you said about a creative midfielder, and on the basis that, you know, he signed a centre half in Dickie, so Viner, Dickie, and Dave. I know you said Naismith slots into the back four and has done for the last couple of games. But if you have a midfield of Knight, Naismith, and who's the other one?
James.
And who, sorry?
James.
Yeah, that trio, right? If you're going to go out and bring somebody in, they've got to be better than those three. And those three are pretty much, you know, one of them is a Pearson favourite and justifies being on the pitch. The other one is the most creative player that we've got who can pick a pass, which is Naismith. And then the final one, Knight, we just paid 2 million quid for in the summer. So that little grouping there, right, seems a bit of a unit for me. And then you've got, as you say, as backup, people that can come in. If you force out one of those three from your starting lineup, they've got to be some player. I mean, I come back, Dave, let me ask you, the same question about, you know, the back. Have the goalposts altered for Nigel? Because he said that's life. He seems resigned to his lot, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, it certainly feels like we sold Scott and then Lansdowne's pulled the drawbridge up, and that's what it seems to me. I'm flabbergasted. When I first heard Nigel talking about, you know, we're near the top of our wage budget, I thought he's trying to be a bit clever here. He's making sure that we don't, you know, we'll bring a couple of players in, but we don't want to pay over the odds for them because we've sold Alex Scott for 20 or 25 million. And he's also trying to be a bit canny with contract renewals, that our own players who we're trying to recontract don't get paid too much just because we've sold a player. And I thought, you know, I can understand that he's playing it a bit sharp with the media. Good on him. That ain't the case, is it? Basically, you know, we could hear last night from his interview with Sheridan Robbins that you can tell he would bring players in if he could. And I think, you know, Ian said, you know, he talked to some sensible fans, and I think no one's was expecting us to go out and spend 5 million on three or four players, as in, you know, 15 or 20 million. No one's expecting that. I was expecting we might go out there and do a couple of deals in the kind of a profile of player and cost of player in the, you know, the realms of McCrory and Knight type signings.
Yeah, and even if Taylor Hickman had been signed,
yeah,
as part of that four, and I know that wasn't feasible necessarily, yeah, at the time, if he'd been signed at that four, you'd have looked at it and you thought, first division, championship, West Brom,
yeah,
moving to better himself. That was a good signing, yeah? So
yeah, the only reason West Brom have let him go is because they can't get rid of, you know, people like Moa and Chalobah who are on 35, 40 grand a week.
Yeah.
So they've had to sacrifice. Corbyn's come out and done a good sales pitch on it, in effect, and, you know, and said, well, you know, he can't get in my, I've got five midfielders and only two can play. But there's no way that they'd have got rid of Gardner Hickman over the others if he, you know, if they could have got rid of Mowat, they'd have saved a lot more money on Mowat than they would saved on, you know, loan with an option to buy for us. And I think we've been quite smart in terms of knowing that that's probably the case, and making sure we've got that option on there, because it'd been very easy just to loan him for the season and give him back. And, you know, the rumours coming out from somebody who appears to be pretty well informed at West Brom is we've paid a 700k loan fee as well. So it's almost like a £2 million transfer, in effect, if it all goes through, which I don't think is unreasonable for a player who's got, you know, 30, 40, 50
but just back championship games. But we need to get players that are better than what we've got. Yeah, that's the sort of money that we need to be spending is, I'll call it...
We need first-team players.
1.8, well, call it 2 to 2.5 million. And McCrory, I mean, you know, it is fine margins, it is bad luck. And losing McCrory, who was, along with Knight, you know, two damn good signings, yeah? We've lost McCrory and no hope of him coming back, yeah, in the foreseeable future.
Yeah. I think we have to wait and see what his diagnosis is, don't we?
Yeah. Just conscious of time on today's recording. Ian, international break coming up. It's probably the difference between 8 points, which would be a great start to the season, 6 points, which would be, I give it a C+, or 5 points from five games, yeah? You know, if we lost, yeah? No pressure on Nigel now. But then if you look at the games before the next international break, there's another six that are coming up, which is West Brom home, Plymouth home, Leicester away, Stoke at home, Rotherham away, Leeds away. Yeah? If I say... We want to be averaging 1.25 points a game as a minimum by the time we get to the quarter stage of the season. Would you agree with that?
Well, if
the not point playoff for
the point you made about Swansea, if we beat Swansea and we got 8 points, then that would mean you're averaging about 1.6, which is
72 points. Simple extrapolation.
74 over a season. 73.6. You want to be pedantic, but and that would be a good effort if we were able to maintain it. And look, if we did get ourselves in a situation where we were drawing at home and winning away, that's not the worst thing in the world.
No,
But my fear is we don't know when Ross is going to be back, and our best wishes go to him, because no footballer. It's one thing having an injury and thinking, well, you know, I've got a broken toe or something, and it's going to be healed in 2 weeks. When you've got that kind of infection, it's not just getting rid of it; it's getting back to fitness.
It's a recovery. It's a recovery period.
And those things hit you for six. So, great sympathy to him. I've only, you know, watched. I've watched him on TV play for Aberdeen. And I've seen the highlights clips on YouTube, and he's another. He strikes me as a bit of a right-footed Cal Naismith, but younger version of. So I'm looking forward to seeing him play, and that's why I say I think everybody was happy with our transfer activity up to the point in Steve Lansdowne said, no, we're not going to, we're not going to increase the wage bill, whatever happens, but we've just increased our annual turnover by 20 million quid, possibly 25 million quid, however you look at it. And then, because I thought the money from Semenyo was funding the summer activity. Now, the communication that came out was, well, we don't need to sell Alex Scott. And once again, like Dave said earlier, you're thinking, well, yeah, that's quite good PR, because you're saying to the marketplace, well, yeah, we'll sell him if we get the right bid, but we're quite happy to stay, and he's quite happy to stay because he wasn't agitating for a move or going on strike or anything like that. So, I mean, I think if we were to win at Swansea, I think that would be, and that's not beyond the realms of us, because the way Swansea play will suit us, and the way they're playing at the moment is they're scoring goals, and they're quite good going forward, but they're not very good at the back. Now, that might suit us because we can play a bit deeper and we can hit them up, hit them with our pace on the break, which is another reason I might play Yeboah.
I think you'll get minutes. I think he won't start. He probably won't start, but he'll get minutes.
I think, but at home particularly, we need to try. You could say, well, what we've done so far, we're picking up an average of 2 points a game away from home. Fantastic. If we can keep going like that, brilliant. Don't change anything. But at home, you know, we can't accept picking up half a point per home game. So looking at it as a glass half full or a glass half empty, you say, right, what can we do to affect that? Okay, we're going to make a bit of a tweak. Listen, if it don't work, it don't work. Go back to what you were doing. But you can't just, you know, that thing about if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got is very prevalent. That's the way, you know, try it.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, I'm not saying play five forwards or play seven in midfield or go, you know, I'm just saying tweak it. You know, the guys and the coaches are good enough to coach that crisis.
Yeah. Dave, I mean, I think as the guys on Radio Bristol said last night, you're not going to rip it all up and start all over again with a new formation or anything like that. But effectively, we did that at the end of the calendar year because we've been playing three at the back. Do you think with the players that we've got now, and that's excluding the ones that are injured, do you think that they could switch to a back three of, say, Viner, Dickey and Naismith? Yes,
I don't think there's any need to.
Stick with the formation. All right.
Yeah.
And going
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I think there are different ways you can play it. Sorry, it's my Ring doorbell going off. Long in the belief that, you know, and this goes back to my own playing days as a kid, like playing under 13 football, where 4-3-3 was the formation we played, and basically we played with a right winger, a left winger, and a centre forward, and the three never saw each other all game. And I think what we've done since losing Antoine Semenyo is we've lost the connection between at least two of them. And if we go back to that slightly, it was only kind of, you know, end of December, January, where, you know, we had Sykes start to score some goals, and he was predominantly playing wide on the right, but he'd cut in or be at the back post ready to have it. But we had Semenyo playing a lot closer to Conway initially and then Wells. So we almost had an inside left, a centre forward and a right winger. So we had a very lopsided front three. And I think that was why we were able to, you know, Wales, you know, it doesn't matter he didn't score many goals last season. I think he's actually looked really sharp this season, and I think he played well last season as well.
No, he looks fit and healthy and everything, yeah.
And we even saw for, you know, 20 minutes on Friday night, however long it was, the impact Cornet can have if he's central and he's got players a bit closer to him as well. And so I think we just need, it's probably a tweak. I think we do need someone closer to Naki. And if that means we have to play lopsided, then that's what we do. So I'd be almost tempted to play, you know, Naki and Cornick as more of a two, even if that means we play. And that means someone like Pring's going to have to, you know, probably do a bit more covering, or the left-hand side of the three in midfield's probably going to have to play a little bit wider when we haven't got the ball. And I do see that, you know, the benefits without the ball of the front three, because it does stop teams getting out through their fullbacks. And in some respects, we did that quite well against Norwich last night. We did stop them playing the way they wanted to play. Mm-hmm. As I say, I don't think we need to rip it all up, but we need to, certainly when we've got the ball, or if we're going to have to go long from the back, we've got to make a concerted effort to get someone around Naki Wells. And for me, that's one of the two wider forwards has got to get there, not someone breaking forward from midfield. They're the ones, the ball's up there and it's dropping, that they need to be there, not for that initial ball up there. And that's sometimes why we then get a little bit kind of caught in our midfield, is because we've, you know, the number 10, if it's been Vyman's attacking instincts are so strong that as soon as that ball goes forward, he's making that run. But sometimes he's made it a bit too soon before we've established possession. And I think that's where we've kind of fallen down in this formation a little bit. So I think it's a bit about some subtle tweaks to it. And I don't think it takes more than that. I think we've got some decent players. I think the worst thing to do would be to panic and kind of throw it in the, you know, throw it in the bin and start again, because I don't think it's a million miles away.
Yeah, okay, good points there. And you say some decent players. Obviously, Mr. Owner thinks we've got some decent players. He thinks that we've got a squad that's better than Luton's squad. Therefore,
and being clear, Dave, I don't think anybody said, and certainly I haven't, rip it up and start again. I'm saying, I think that the comment Steve made about developing a £25 million player every year, I think that was probably said a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but I hope it was.
Why has he set the wage budget? You know, and I know you can have a whole playing budget, you can have a wage budget, you can have a transfer budget, but I see no reason whatsoever to set the wage budget as constrained as it is. It to me, it's bonkers, and to me, I feel like he's setting up Nigel to fail. It's almost like, well, I'm going to constrain it. If you do well with it, well, I've proved my point.
And begrudging, I've said it on Twitter. He is scant in his praise of Nigel. And when you look at what Nigel's done, okay, his playing record is open to question by a lot of people. But when you look at what he's done with the wages and getting it all the way down, and he's had a slap in the face from Lansdowne, I think. That's my view. I think you'd agree with that as well, Ian. You've as good as said that, Dave.
I just think it would never surprise me, now that Lee Johnson's had the sack at Hibernian, if Nigel Pearson went for or another, you could call it mutual consent, he might just get cheesed off and walk, but I think he's probably too experienced to do that. I don't think Stephen Lansdowne is giving the same support to Nigel Pearson that he gave to Lee Johnson and Mark Ashton. And I think...
Go on.
And I think he could... You know, like Dave said, no one in their right mind is saying go out and spend 15 million quid on new players. But what we are saying is that we need a stronger squad to be able to compete at the right end of the table. Yeah. You know, and I don't think if we went out and we brought in two or three quality players, it would necessarily mean we make the playoffs, but it'd give us a hell of a lot more chance. And what... There seemed that there was a level of discontent, I'll put it no stronger than that, amongst the fans when the communication was made that we wouldn't be strengthening any further in this window. And it wasn't just people on podcasts like me or people that are active on Twitter that were saying it. It was lots and lots and lots of people.
If you look at it, Ian, in terms of what Nigel Pearson's done, he's cleared out a load of deadwood. He's cleared out a load of high cost. And if we look at the wage bill when he took over was 30 million quid.
Yeah.
By my estimates, I think it's going to be round about 18-20. And that's not all football club. Not all playing side. That's, you know, including loads of admin people as well. So over a period of three seasons, he'll have probably saved somewhere. If we'd have carried on at those costs, he'd have probably saved us 25 million in wages.
Yeah.
And amortisation, that was at 12 million at peak. It then went down to 9 and down to 6, and I predict it's going to be about 2.5. He saved another 20-odd million off that high cost base that we had.
And he's a young player who's gone on and raised them 25 million in transfers.
And the 10 million Frantz. So I think he's about, like, I can't remember what numbers I've just done there, but it's about 60 or 70 million in credit in my book, in terms of what would have happened if we'd have carried on spending what we'd done. To not allow him to sign some players is absolutely wrong. And I know he doesn't want a big squad, and I think we're all saying the same here. If we'd have turned around after Alex Scott sell and signed two more Jason Knight types, not necessarily his
position.
Everyone
would have been happy.
And he hasn't been allowed to do it. It's absolutely crazy. And I think, you know, this is where we need to hear from, and I put it on a tweet last night, we need to either hear from the owner, we need to hear from the chairman, who's the owner's son, or we need to hear from the CEO. The CEO is only really carrying out the instructions of the owner. So, you know, I think we need to hear from Steve Lansdowne.
Well,
personally,
I think the communication...
because I think he's letting people down. And if that reason is because he don't want to stick the money in while he's trying to sell the club, just come out and tell us that. Yeah, but at the moment, he's given us false promise. And I think in that interview in Guernsey, sorry, I'll shut up in a second.
What you're saying is 100% behind what
actually
you're saying.
It wasn't his Guernsey interview. It was an interview that he did with Tim Shires about 10 years ago, where he said, sometimes you just got to give the fans hope. Well, he's completely got rid of that, hasn't he? Because actually, I'm pretty positive, aren't I? And I feel completely disillusioned with that side
before,
of the club at the moment.
It's more about what's going on behind the scenes that's creating your negativity.
Well, I think it's that lack of clarity with the fans. If Steve Lansdowne has come out and said, right, if now we sold Alex Scott past the loan with an option deal we've done for Taylor Gardner-Hickman, we will not be spending any more money in the transfer market, because then I think fans, they might not like it, and I don't think they would like it, but at least they'll say, well, all right, the communication's clear, we know what's going on. They wouldn't blame Nigel Pearson, because everybody's lining up to take credit for cutting the wage bill. You know, yeah. Richard Gould, John Lansdowne, everybody's taking credit for it. Now, the person at the sharp end has been Nigel Pearson, who I'll put it in parentheses, suffered because of that lack of funding. I mean, no manager, or I don't think any manager, if they went to Nigel Pearson tomorrow, say, look, hang on, Nigel, we've got to think about this. There's 5 million quid to spend if you can go out and bring in the right two or three players. I don't think he's going to say no. I don't want him. He said last night, I'm a pragmatist, I'm a realist. It's where we are. And we continually hear this phrase, it's where we are. And I think fans are rightly saying, well, when will we be in...
will we be in a place where we can see we're heading
in the right place? Yeah. What is the right place? When do we get there? Because I agree with Dave. I heard an interview with Steve Lansdowne, and he got on to, well, what should the wage bill be? And the figure he quoted was 18 to 20 million. And my guess is we're there.
Yeah, Dave just said.
Already said his guesses. We're there.
It's not even playing budget, though, is it? That's wages for the football club, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's a lot of people. You know, you go down to that club, and I speak to people who are, you know, respected people in the local community. You say, well, I've been going down the city for years, and I know everybody down there. And I remember years ago, you knew everybody. You went down, and now you see hundreds of people wandering about the place in Bristol City training gear. And you haven't got a clue who they are.
And 200 employees.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's a terrible thing or anything's badly run or whatever, but, you know, we lost a fortune in the last two financial years. I mean, absolute king's ransom.
And Dave and I were talking offline yesterday because XR Robin put a tweet out saying, you know, like, oh, we're a club, we can't expect Lansdowne to keep putting his hand in his pocket because we're a club that's losing £92,000 a week, right? £92,000 a week. And you think, well, hang on a minute. You know, why are we losing £92,000 a week? What is fundamentally wrong with our cost base when you look at, okay, I use Birmingham as an example alongside Millwall and Preston. But alongside Millwall and Preston, yeah, who have both been better than us over the last few years, they haven't got a benefactor to lose £92,000 a week. They go bust. Dave, you know, you
agree with me. What's happened to you can spend what you generate, which was this previous mantra? That's gone out the window. I think that's really why we're struggling as fans, is that we've not been told why things have changed. And the expectation of Tinian came out, we've got a plan A with Alex Scott, we've got a plan B without him. Well, Taylor Gardner-Hickman wasn't the plan B without him, was it?
I think that's
a reaction from McCrory.
I think he was signed because of the extent of the problem that McCrory has. And I think that was, he had no option but to let him do that. Yeah. And getting back to the point about the money, it would have been, he would have, if Lansdowne had said to the fans, right, we've had 25 million for Alex Scott, 20 plus five, because of Scott's injury, I think that's why we've got 20 plus five rather than straight 25, right? Because we needed the money in this year's accounts. But if Lansdowne had said, all right, Nigel, you're going to have a quarter of that fee to spend on a combination of wages or transfers as you think fit, everybody would have said, live with that. But the communication, there has been a distinct lack of communication. I mean, there's somebody on the staff there who's called director or communications officer. I think that's Roger Barton. Yeah. You know, somebody needs to front up. Somebody needs to front up pretty damn soon and say,
I think that's why Nigel Pearson's interview last week before the whole game, the kind of one with the Bristol Post and Radio Bristol, I think he sounded a little bit cheesed off, not because he's in a mood, but I think he's constantly being asked to front up about on questions about transfers and contracts. It's not his role. He's told us that. Of course he's involved in the process and things like that, but that's not his job, and we're not hearing from anyone else.
Whilst we had man, you know, mouth on a stick, Mark Ashton always there when things were good, right? When Richard Gould was here, he struck the balance. He was there when it mattered. He got taken down. You know, he made a couple of interviews he did where he probably didn't say too much. He didn't manage it well. But Gould was there as a figurehead that you thought Gould and Pearson combined seemed a good combo. Whereas we've picked up somebody who was recommended to Steve Lansdowne by Richard Scudamore, who has been conspicuous by his absence in terms of any fronting up of anything. And if you read on the Palace forums what he did, Phil Alexander, he's probably a lovely guy, but he had nothing to do with the playing side. Everything he did was commercial. And when you're a Premier League club, the commercial opportunities to exploit and develop are a lot different to being a Championship club, which we are.
And to be fair, there's probably a lot of commercial stuff that needs sorting out as well. not least
the away kit. Anyway,
we could talk
all day about this. And thanks, Sam, your comment on their brilliant topical pot. Yeah, we should have maybe done less on the game because it was not a game to forget, but less on the game and more on this. But I say some of us have got jobs to do. that means mainly me. I shouldn't have time off. Dave, great to have you on again. And let's sort of have it. You know, if it's once a month or something like that, it'd be good to have you on. Happy 18th birthday to your lad, Joe, at the weekend. So I know you've got a big weekend lined up for that. Happy birthday,
happy
for
birthday
that, Ian.
Joe.
I'll be with you cheers. On Saturday tea time, where we'll do a review of the Swansea game. I'm hoping it's going to be that we come back from South Wales with something. Yeah, but in the meantime, everybody, as always, all 1,000+ of you, thanks for listening. Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
God bless everybody.
I've been unlucky. Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robins are bobbing along. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up. Get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.